Okay. Good evening, folks. Good afternoon. Good evening. Welcome to Something Like It on 101.5 with me, your thought but cowardly host, Dr. Octavius. Thank you for tuning in to Drive Time Radio. I don't know. Like, I've just had, like, the weirdest week. You know when, like, December is, like, around the corner, it comes, but you weren't, like, expecting it? Like, it, like, elbows you, you know? Not like a U.S. congressman would do, but, like, it just, like, it comes, it falls, like, out of nowhere. Like, literally what just happened to me. I just woke up and they're like, well, next week is, like, December. And people, like, you know, keep asking me, what are you doing for the holidays? I'm like, I didn't even know it was the holidays. How was I supposed to know? I've just been sitting here watching the time pass me by. Like, if no one told me I was going to wake up one day, I don't know, looking like Joe Biden, you know? I don't know if anyone saw him, like, it was his birthday recently, and he had, like, this birthday cake, which I'm assuming he had to take his dentures out to blow it out. And it had, like, 81 candles on it. It looked like they were trying to torch the White House. It was craziest thing I've ever seen. But yeah, on to today. Today is actually very, I don't want to say a sensitive topic, but we're going to be discussing something that I've found to be particularly pressing, you know? That's the whole point of this show. We discuss the pressing matters, and sometimes we do have to walk a certain line. Sometimes people don't want to talk about some of these things, but, you know, we get on with it anyways. But I'm going to roll this clip for you guys, and then we're going to get into it. Yeah.
Health problem just as lethal as chronic smoking sweeping across the country. It is loneliness. Circle of Health reporter Denise Tudor on the health effects and the new government initiative to make isolation a public health priority.
Moving from Australia was a big change, and just as medical administrator Yvonne Cheng and her family were adjusting, the pandemic hit.
Not being able to go out and see friends anymore, was worried about my daughter's, you know, upbringing.
For so many like Yvonne, the stress of feeling isolated took its toll.
Loneliness was actually a problem before the pandemic.
UC Irvine School of Medicine psychiatrist Dr. Jody Rawls says research reveals one in two Americans report experiencing loneliness.
People have been increasingly isolated, increasingly stressed out.
U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy released an advisory about the devastating impact of loneliness.
How we communicate with one another has changed and often shifted from in-person to online.
The consequences of poor connection include a 29% increased risk of heart disease, a 32% increased risk of stroke, and a 50% increased risk of developing dementia for older adults.
Loneliness and isolation can increase your risk for premature death, comparable to the levels of smoking every day.
If someone reading this goes like, oh, I'm lonely, I'm gonna die of a heart attack, don't overthink it. Just start figuring out how you can make an incremental small improvement.
Dr. Rawls' prescription, make a plan to meet someone or go on an outing. Just having a plan can boost your mood.
You can endure a long day of work if you know that at the end of the day, you're going to get together and go for a walk with a friend or a neighbor.
Making sure our workplaces cultivate connection, our schools teach our children about how to manage their emotions and understand emotions.
Yvonne is grateful for the return to in-person work and school. She believes human beings are resilient.
It's lovely to see that we are able to go back.
Hello, I'm Mark Brown.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about loneliness precisely. However, I do want to talk about social occasions, the things that surround them, and maybe the little things that happen at social occasions, and maybe the little things that we do that make people not want to go to these social engagements, you know? I feel like human beings are these social creatures, and we have to talk to each other, and social occasions are the greatest mark of that. To me, social occasions is a very broad term. A party is a social occasion. A wedding is a social occasion. And stuff like that. To me, even a barbecue is a social occasion. And many things happen at social occasions that we maybe are oblivious to that may put people off of wanting to, I don't want to say attend, but to engage with them, you know? And I want to know whether this sort of sparks or increases people's propensity to actually not want to engage socially, you know? I don't necessarily have social anxiety on the level of, you know, some people explain to me what their social anxiety feels like. And I go, well, I have social anxiety, but I can do this and I can do that. And sometimes people are like, dude, but then you go on the radio weekly and you can do that and you do stand-up comedy and all this stuff. And I always explain to them that it's not the same thing, but I do get the point where they're coming from. There's some people who don't even know how to handle sometimes the most simple and basic social engagements. And that means that we kind of have to accommodate them. And I'll tell you why. I was reading an article in CBC that came out about 2 days ago, and it equated the health effect of loneliness to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. That's beyond scary. To me, I completely get why now the United Nations recently made sure that loneliness was declared a global epidemic. It's a global health emergency. But, you know, there's some fun and lighthearted stuff, too, that does come from some of these things that we endure. But they're not always fun for everyone. And I'm going to dive into that during the show. And we'll be right back after these messages. Sorry about that. We're experiencing some technical difficulties. So I want to dive right in. When it comes to these social occasions, I think it's you make your pick, right? Because to me, engaging socially, it kind of varies. I grew up not necessarily in the biggest family. It's me and my two brothers, my mom and dad, and we just grew up traveling a lot. So we had, you know, to pass the time being away from the rest of the family, not being able to see, you know, your grandparents and all that. We take a lot of road trips. Part of it is because we just, you know, we're an outdoorsy type family and, you know, we like to go camping and all that stuff. And so to me, part of what, you know, a social occasion is to me is, say, actually road tripping. The road trip in itself to me is a social occasion because sometimes you haven't seen each other in such a long time, you know, whether because someone was traveling. I'm always here in Canada away on school and everyone has different engagements and sometimes my parents are working in different parts of the world. And when we meet, it does feel exactly like any other social occasion where family members are meeting, you know. My dad is in the he's up front, he's driving. My brothers and I haven't seen each other. You know, we start off catching up, of course. What happened to you? Oh, and then I had that happen, and that happened, and that happened. About 2 hours into the journey, much like any other family, you know, my other brother's yanking at my brother's dreadlocks. Everyone's screaming the most profane things you can imagine at each other. My mom is in the passenger seat, obviously just asleep. She's knocked out. She can sleep through anything. And my dad, he's got like a decibel limit, you know. So if you're fighting in the back and you go over it, that's, you know, that's when he gets mad. For the most part, he's just cruising. He does not care. To me, that's a social occasion because there are people who don't even want to engage with family, especially like from my generation. I feel like we've had a I think we've had a relationship with technology for way too long, you know. They estimate that we got cell phones when we were about 10 years old. I think, yeah, around 9, 10 years old, I already had a cell phone. I can engage with my friends in real time at any one time. And I've been able to do that for technically most of my life now. And as a result of that, I feel that the way that we interact with human beings in person is, it's amazing. And I feel that's also why we're such a nostalgic generation, because we watch these movies, these rom-coms or whatever, and there's like a wedding going on, and then everything goes wrong, and someone has to come and cut down a tree because someone double-booked the venue, you know? And so as these two people are getting married, it's like, do you take this man, and there's like a chainsaw going, to be a lawfully, you know? And at the end of it, people are mad at each other, you know, the one sibling screaming at the other, you know, I'm coming to your wedding in a diaper, or whatever it is people say to each other, like family occasions like that. I think it's almost, I don't want to say unheard of. I think for our generation, we do not engage in the same way. We are still very much social. We keep it on. I have friends who tell me, and they like to remind me, that they do not want to engage with me on the phone. They're like, dude, just text. I text back like immediately. Like, why would you call me? That's weird. Who does that? And so if you can't even go so far as having a conversation over the phone, how on earth are you going to do that? Like, if you're invited somewhere, you know, I mentioned earlier that I grew up and my family was like always traveling. One thing that I find that, you know, I struggle with as a result, not necessarily of social anxiety, I think everyone else can kind of relate to this, because when I speak to people, they do kind of express this, where we all live in a multicultural society to some extent, and your friend invites you for an event, maybe a cultural event, that you're not necessarily like prepared for, like you've never been to one such event, and you kind of have to get there. And usually it's like maybe it's just you, because you're closer to that person than most other people. And you kind of feel out of place for like the first 20, 30, or maybe you feel out of place for throughout the whole event. And you kind of have to stay because this is your very close friend, and you don't want to kind of, you know, ruin their event. You don't want to ruin the work that they've kind of put into this. And I think if this is something that you struggle with at an event that you weren't prepared to attend, I think that's how it feels. I don't want to assume things, you know. I feel like we should have like a feedback, you know, like a social media page where you guys can kind of just tell me your thoughts on this. I feel like when you're going through the motions of that, that's exactly how people who have social anxiety feel about many other engagements, you know. And when I started thinking that way, I started thinking to myself, well, if people who have either social anxiety or just, you know, people who are in a cosmopolitan setting, like imagine people who live in a place like Toronto, okay? Not everyone who's in Toronto is from Toronto. I'll start off with the fact that so many people who live in Toronto immigrated from different countries, not different towns, not different cities. As in, some people are like fresh off the boat. Other people are second generation immigrants. Other people are refugees. And they all live in this massive cosmopolitan city. And they kind of have to live in it and engage socially with all these people. That means even if you've lived in Toronto your whole life, even in, you know, your little bubble in your everyday life, you're going to run into people who are either going through, about to go through something that you can't necessarily relate to, or you're going to be invited to something like that. Either it's like a co-worker or, you know, it could be a friend, or it could be something you just happen to want to try. Because people who live in big cities like to try things, you know. It's different here in Winnipeg. Like, people are like, maybe I'll go out, maybe I won't. You know, people kind of have like a routine here. And I find that like very fascinating, because I lived in big cities pretty much my whole life, you know. I lived in Lagos for a while, which is like a city of like 20 million people. And if you live in a city of 20 million people, I'll tell you this. Life is different in every corner of that city. And my home city, I kind of grew up in Johannesburg. There's parts of it that I don't know. Like, I can tell you like what the general area is like, because I drove by there. You know, I was on the freeway, and then I thought to myself, well, I should probably go and, you know, like, check that out. Yeah, I've done that before, but I don't know how the people there live. I've gone to places where people actually speak different in that city. Same city, different culture, different cultural backgrounds. People engage in different stuff. Their experience of what Johannesburg is very much different from what my experience is. And so when people live in a place where there's 8 million people, I think that makes it so easy to like feel lonely and isolated, because you can't, I think relating is crucial to social engagements, right? That's why, you know, when, say, veterans come back from war, sometimes they just become friends forever, right? Like Forrest Gump and his, I forgot what his friend was called in the movie. Oh gosh, I need to rewatch Forrest Gump. That was a classic. That was a great movie. You know, it's just an example of how we can completely forget and leave out all these people. And if you live in a city, you have stuff to do. I was telling someone the other day, like, you know, the weirdest part of like moving to Winnipeg was that in Joburg, one of the things that's kind of stuck, I don't know how it's stuck because there's like 8 million people. One of the things that stuck is that whether you're walking on the street, whether you're in a rush to work, doesn't matter where you are, if you see people in the morning walking to wherever they're walking to, usually it's work, you either wave or you say good morning, right? If they're older, you know, there's obviously a respectful way of saying good morning to someone who's older than you, you know, just acknowledging that they're there, and, you know, you recognize that. And then I moved to Winnipeg, and I thought it was going to be the same because Winnipeg is a bit smaller. But then it's kind of like, not really. Like, people are going about their day, dude. Like, you know, not to say that there's anything wrong with it. It was like a culture shock type thing. And then that, some, for some people, that's where it actually starts. Sometimes when I ask people who came from, like, South Africa, that, to them, that's where it starts. It's like, oh, I kind of have to, like, figure out how I engage with people here, because that's, you know, you start to feel awkward, you know. Not awkward as in like Nate Fielder on Jimmy Kimmel this week. No, like, it's almost like an awkward off. That was embarrassing, you know, because someone's left you hanging, you know. I feel that. When I'm left hanging, I feel that. I take that personally for some reason. But, yeah, let me know what you guys think. We'll be right back after these messages.
A Canadian first. Manitoba Opera presents Lee Kerr, Riel's Heart of the North, a celebration of Métis women, language, and culture. This history-making world premiere features singers, actors, a 50-voice chorus, fiddlers, jigging, and dance, and the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra. November 18th, 22nd, and 24th at the Centennial Concert Hall. For tickets, go to mbopera.ca. Underwritten by BMO.
Okay, welcome back to Something Like It. So we were talking early on about just how social occasions can leave people out. What I want to understand is, do we have to rethink social occasions? The biggest thing for me is, you know, I'm a university student, I'm in my 20s, and we go for parties. That's like our thing, just hardcore parties. Those started to feel less and less like social occasions to me, especially as I started going, you know? Because I feel like, well, we went out that night, right? But I did not really engage with anyone. Did we have fun? Maybe, okay? And it's possible that's just me. I don't want to say outgrowing, because that would make it seem like, you know, people who go for parties are in any way immature or childish. No, maybe it's just me not wanting to engage that way anymore, you know? But some of those people do genuinely feel, and I have asked so many friends about this, they do genuinely feel like, oh, you know, I go out almost every weekend, but I do not feel I have a genuine friend who I can just sit down with and have a conversation. And that's odd, because parties have been going on since before us, since before Gen Z and iPhones, and everyone, you know, started saying, oh, everyone's antisocial because they're playing games on their phones, they're playing video games. This is like, you know, the old school stuff. People have been partying since before. We're not even like a partying generation, actually. It's almost sad, because I would have loved to be a rock star, dude. Those guys were awesome. But before I go like completely off topic here, off trail, like in rethinking this stuff, like in California, I think they started like a social club for people, an anti-loneliness social club. Whew. Yeah, I got it, people. I got it. Yeah. I think if we are going to rethink how we engage socially, like, how are we going to do it, though? Especially in a big city, because you have to worry about so many things. You have to worry about your safety. You have to make sure that you're engaging with people who you know you will like, and to some degree trust. Look, you don't have to trust everyone, but you have to trust someone enough that you can hang out with them. You can trust them to not, you know, stand you up when you go out or whatever, which is difficult, right? People can't have difficulty like that with something like dating, and then they have to do that with friends too, because I would assume friends offer like a support for people who are, say, dating, people who, you know, as you're going through the motions. You need friends and acquaintances in your daily life. You know, we're living through a very odd, say, difficult time. We just come out of a pandemic. We have, like, a cost of living crisis that's going on. And I don't think that anyone wants to live through this very difficult time by themselves, you know? Everyone kind of wants a shoulder to cry on. Everyone kind of wants a friend who can hold their hand, tell them, look, it's going to be fine, you know? For me, that friend is my mom, dude. Like, I know you guys are probably thinking, hey, he's a mama's boy. Yeah, so what, dude? Like, you know, But I have friends. I have a lot of friends. I have, you know, I try to keep track of all that. But I'm also a student. And I think it becomes more difficult after you have that, after you have that social setting of being in school, where if you join a club or you go to a class or you experience something, boom, you're friends. And then it kind of stays that way. Well, people these days leave school and then they move to another city or another country, or they go work online on a foreign island. That's a thing that people are doing now. Yeah. And when people do stuff like that, it's kind of like you are the one who has, it's on you now. It's now on your shoulders. You kind of have to figure out, well, how am I going to navigate this little situation that's been put on my lap, put on my shoulders, right? If you move to another city, are you going to go for pottery class? If you move to another city, are you going to join a professional club? And if you join a club like that, are you going to be with people with whom you're going to be talking about work 24/7? And then your career becomes your life? And I don't think that's healthy. I don't think that's healthy at all. And, you know, I think it recreates the same problems that are being highlighted here. Because you're kind of lonely, but you found a way to distract yourself. And I'm not immune of this. I do that sometimes when I just don't want to deal with things in life. I'm just like, I'm just going to bury myself in work. And then I figure it out from there. But social occasions are the key. If we find a way to ensure that they're not too awkward for everyone, they're not too weird for everyone, man, you don't understand. Social occasions are the bedrock of human engagement and whatever. I'm an intellectual. I need to learn more big words. Anyone can relate to a social occasion to some degree, but people just don't really, you know, especially in big cities, especially if you're away from family, they don't engage with them in the way that you would expect them to. We've all had a dog eat our homework at some social occasion at one point. And so it starts when you're a kid. You know what a social occasion is and you know what it's for. Let's just make it fun for everyone, dude. I don't want to be there having fun on my own, people asking me what I'm doing for the holidays, and no one else can kind of relate. Someone else is in the corner. Someone's on their phone. Let's talk to one another. Let's engage with one another. Let's make a safe space when we're outside for one another, even if you're throwing a frisbee in the park. My name is Octavius. I've been your thought but intellectual host. I've been your thought but cowardly host. Well, yeah, I'm really off it today, huh? The Hockey Show is on next at 5:30. You guys have a good week, and we'll be back next week. Good night.